Hey, this is Chris Burns. Every week we go beyond the show to give you extended interviews, answer your questions, or even just dig deeper into a topic. Hey, if you're not getting our update, by the way, every day, just jump on dynamicmoney.com. You can get that update straight to your inbox, know exactly what's going on, but enjoy this episode of Beyond the Show. So I want to talk a little bit more about something that I've mentioned before, and that's the reality that we live now in what I call a market-driven retirement. And it's entirely different than most people realize. Here's what I mean, okay? Your parents and grandparents, or depending on your age, possibly you, worked with the idea that you would have a pension. I've talked so many times about my grandparents and the reality that they literally live with six pensions right now. They will call me and say, hey, I don't know what to do with all the money in my checking account, because they're receiving pensions from military service. Both of them were teachers, so they have pensions from that. And they both get Social Security. So they have all these pensions flowing in, and they've never touched their savings. And they have diligently saved as well. So they have a good amount of savings sitting out there, but they've never needed it because they've had this consistent pension. Well, here's the deal. That shifted, right, in the late 70s. And so by the time I was old enough to understand anything about retirement, all I heard was the glory of the 401k, that's what you did. In fact, it wasn't until I was in this industry that I even realized that 401ks weren't around until really the late 70s, early 80s. I had no clue, because the way I was raised was that is how you retire. Pensions were receding, 401ks were it. And I was told as long as you contribute, as long as you put money in with the power of compound interest over time, you're going to be great. In fact, you're going to do really well. If you go back and look at the advertisements surrounding this from the 80s and the 90s, you will see literally charts showing you're going to have millions and millions of dollars just because you were consistent enough to start when you were 20 years old and every year you saved, and look at the power of compound interest, and we're all going to be filthy rich. And maybe you didn't believe that, but there's literally advertisements you can find. It's remarkable, from financial companies showing this is what's going to happen. So what changed? Well, what changed was this massive roadblock of 2000 to 2010, this reminder that the world and the market doesn't always do what we expect it to do. And so we had the massive drop in the early 2000s, the dot-com bubble burst, and a lot of folks lost a lot of money. In fact, people I work with, some of them lost more money in that period than they lost in 2008, because they were so excited about, you know, internet companies and this new movement in that direction, that they lost 70, 80, 90% because some of the companies they were investing in just totally went under. And then after that, we have a few years and suddenly it's 2008. It's the worst drop since the Great Depression. And that decade made people terrified and brought back this reminder that the market is not a quote unquote safe place that you can just sit back and go, everything's going to be fine. I'm going to have millions of dollars and it's going to keep going up forever. And we're in danger in some ways of revisiting that, because now here we sit 10 years later, it's the longest bull market in history, everything feels really good. But here's a point a lot of people miss, that no one until now has ever retired on a 401k. Please hear this again. No one until now has ever retired on a 401k. What does that mean? Well, if 401ks didn't exist until, again, late 70s, early 80s is when the first folks started utilizing 401ks, and I won't get into all the history of how that came about, but when that started happening, if you were just beginning your career at that point, right, then you are sitting now in 2020 nearing the point of retirement, or at the point of retirement. Therefore, no one until now has ever worked their full job with a 401k and then retired on it and let us actually see the outcome of that. It's never happened. And so even though all of us are running around going 401ks are it, that is the ticket, that's the way to success, that's the way you have a great and happy retirement, it's never been tested of what the long-term impact of that is. It couldn't have been, because we'd never been able to see somebody do it until now. Which was a sobering, it knocked me over. The first time I realized this, as I was looking at it and understanding the history of it and starting to talk with folks about it, I've never talked with anybody about this that's gone, oh yeah, that makes... Everyone I talk to just like me, has had this assumption that, well, 401k, that's going to be fine. And let me just say this. I do not mean 401ks are terrible or that you shouldn't be utilizing them. They're fantastic. They're great tools for building wealth, and used the correct way, they're a huge instrumental part of you having a successful retirement. Please hear me say that. But at the same time, we are living off of guesswork and theory because no one's ever retired on one. And you might say, well, no, that's not true. I mean, my dad, for instance, you might say, had 15 years of a 401k. Yeah, 15 years of that out of his career that spanned a much longer period. This is the first time anyone would have started their career with a 401k and not a pension, gone through all their working years, all the ups and downs in the market, and now come out and said, I'm ready to retire. What does that look like? And friends, we're living on assumptions and guesswork. And this is a really, really big deal. And I don't mean that again to scare people, and I certainly don't mean it in the way that you'll see this presented by a lot of folks in the insurance industry, which is, well, therefore you need to go buy an annuity today, or therefore you need to go to safety today. That's what you're going to hear from a lot of people. What I'm saying is we have to step back and be realistic. If on the one hand we had decades of people saying 401ks are like this magic elixir that as long as you pour money into them, you're going to come out with millions of dollars on the other end, and then the pendulum swings after 2000 to 2010 and people are scared of the market, and so we see tons and tons of annuity sales, right? We see annuity sales skyrocket. And what are annuities? Well, there's a lot of different types, but the type of sales that skyrocketed were ones that had protection built in, that if the market were to drop, you wouldn't lose your money. And so suddenly we see this move from everything should be in 401ks to a whole lot of people putting billions and billions of dollars into annuities because of a promise of safety, because of fear of the market. So we swing the other direction. And what I'm trying to say and help all of us think about is there is a middle ground here that is crucial, because either of those extremes can really put you in a bad position. And we have a brand new reality. No one's ever done it before. So how does that impact you? Well, for one thing, it makes thinking through how you're going to receive income entirely on your shoulders. Okay? So back, think about your grandparents for a minute. Good chance they had a pension. All right? If they had a pension, how much time did they have to spend contemplating how am I going to receive income? Virtually none. It was on autopilot for them. Again, like I just mentioned with my grandparents, yes, they saved money because they were savers. They grew up directly after the Great Depression. They remembered that. They were thrifty. So they saved a lot, but they never had that fear of, well, I'm not going to get an income, because they had multiple pensions coming their way. And so they've never used the savings, right? This is the first generation where we have to say it truly is back to just on me. Like, if I mess this up, if I don't invest correctly, if I don't save correctly, there's not some backup plan here. And this, by the way, also goes to a lot of the debates we're seeing between the Republicans and Democrats right now, that Democrats are pushing so hard for the government to provide that backup plan, that it's the government's job to make sure not only, you know, we think back at 2008, there was a too big to fail with companies too big to fail, that Democrats are pushing in many ways. No one should be able to fail. We need to create societal safety nets that say we're all going to be okay no matter what. And yet the end reality is, as it stands right now, it is on you in a way that it has not been for your parents or your grandparents, especially if you're nearing retirement right now, to figure out how am I taking income. And too many of us have just said, well, what I'm just going to do is keep just putting money in that 401k. And then when I get to retirement, and then there's a pause. And that's what I see with people who come into my office in their 50s, is kind of this look of confusion of, wait a minute, I knew what I was supposed to do up to this point. I knew that I was supposed to just keep putting money away. I've done that diligently. It's actually been working. I've seen incredible growth. That's great. But no one's ever talked about, what do I do once I actually have to start taking money out? And here's the dirty secret of the financial industry, right? That 401ks are an amazing wealth building tool and an absolutely miserable wealth distribution tool. They were never built for that. The market is amazing at growing your money. The market is not primarily the best place to pull your money out. Why? Because it's unpredictable. I'll never forget the client I have now who in 2007 decided he was going to retire. He had enough savings to retire. He said, all right, I'm going to do this. He went to his advisor at that point. It was not me. And the advisor said, you're in good shape. In fact, you can maintain your aggressiveness because you have so much money in the market that you're going to be fine. And then what happened? In 2008, he loses over 40% of his portfolio, goes back to work. By the time I meet with him in 2015, he is still working. This is now, 7 years after he planned to retire. Why? Because he trusted the market to be the safe distribution tool to get him through retirement, and that's not how it's built. Now, are there ways to take money out of the market in a healthy way? Sure, of course there are. But it's not primarily built to be a distribution tool. And not only that, you don't see people talk about this, because why in the world would Fidelity Investments or Vanguard spend marketing dollars helping you figure out how to take your money out of their products? Friends, you have to go to incentives. Just like we go to incentives on why is it healthy not to work with people that primarily take commissions, or at least if you are going to work with those people, to ask them hard questions, because commissions incentivize someone to make a choice, you know, that increases their pay. They may not do that, but they're incentivized to do that. In the same way, is Fidelity incentivized to help you take your money out? Of course not. They make their money through you keeping it in. And this is why it's so critical that in the midst of, yes, putting money away successfully, consistently, over time, with compound interest, that is a beautiful way to build money. And the folks I meet with who have done that consistently are doing great at that. They come to me in their 50s or early 60s and go, holy cow, I've never thought about the other side of this, which is how do I take it out? It is a new reality. It's a market-driven retirement. And that's why earlier, and on the show, I talked about it is a really big deal of increasing anxiety that I've never seen before. I've seen people be worried about a lot of things, but increasingly the fear is, what if I can't work long enough? What if something happens that keeps me from working until I'm 65 or 70? A lot of folks I meet with go, I don't see how the numbers are going to work unless I keep going till I'm 70. And by the time I get close to that, they're going to replace me with some younger person. And these folks, it keeps them up at night. They're worried about this all the time. Why? Because they're starting to recognize, it's all about how much time do I have to put a certain amount of money away, or I'm not going to be okay. And here's the key. You've got to do planning around this, and you've got to do it, if you can, as early as possible. And I don't mean to say that, so if you're 68 years old listening right now and you've never thought about this, that you're ruined, because you're not. I meet with a lot of people and I'm amazed, usually just by digging in and looking at all the different pieces of their financial world, this is something we can figure out. But I tell you what, it is not as simple as just going, I'm just going to start taking money out of the market. Let me give you an example of this. Okay, the first research done on this was back in the early 90s, like 1992, and it developed something that was called the 4% rule. Now, remember, back in early 1990s, no one's ever retired on a 401k. So this is the first analysis of people trying to get their arms around, financial advisors trying to go, all right, well, how much money can you take out of a 401k and still be okay? Because if we're not going to have pensions primarily, we need to understand how do we withdraw money safely from the market. And that study did what was called a Monte Carlo survey, which looked over, you know, thousands of different scenarios to say how much money can you take out. And what came out was 4%. And it became so popular, literally it was called the 4% rule. I still have people come into my office and talk about the 4% rule. That here's how it actually broke down. That 80% of the time, if you took 4% out of your portfolio, historically, you'd have at least $1 left by the time you died. That was the actual analysis that was done. But there were a few problems with the analysis. The problem, first one, was they included no fees, which is entirely non-existent. So they didn't include any advisory fees. They didn't include any mutual fund fees. They didn't include custodial fees. Those are all realities for most people investing. Okay, so in 2013, Morningstar comes back, Morningstar, the investment research giant, and says we need to redo this analysis, and they add a few things. One, they add a 1% fee, which is still lower than what most people are actually paying when you put all the fees together. And the second thing they did was say, well, we got to adjust inflation because inflation's a lot lower than it was in the early 90s when we made these assumptions. So they adjusted those two things and redid this. And now they redid it very comprehensively with some of the leading experts in the retirement income field. And guess what they came out with? Well, actually, you can take 2.8% out per year. And that gives you a 90% chance of having at least $1 when you die. Now, hold on a second. Think about this. I heard somebody say this once, and I thought this was a good analogy. Imagine for a moment, you're going to jump on an airplane, and you're going from Atlanta to LA, right? You get on the airplane in Atlanta, and the captain jumps on and says, friends, I have great news. We have a 90% chance that we are going to make it to LA today, so I'm feeling good. How long would you stay on that airplane? You'd be off that sucker as fast as possible. And yet we look at our retirements and we go, well, 90%, that's okay. All right, it's fair. No, it's not fair. That's not how you want to think about your retirement. But the key is this. It doesn't mean that you can only take 3% forever, because if you look at your, that'll freak you out fast, right? If you say, wait a minute, I've got $2 million in my portfolio, which a lot of folks don't have that. I have $2 million. That still means I'm only taking out, if I'm taking 3%, that's like $90,000 a year, and that's not bad, but that's before taxes. I take taxes out. Where is that going to put me? And I'm losing my mind, because if it's 3% of $2 million, I have $60,000. There we go. Where is that going to put me? Is that the dream retirement you always had? And this is where we get into having to think far more intelligently about this, because it's not just like it used to be. We want to take the world of pensions. We want to take that autopilot and the safety and the comfort that came from knowing, hey, look, I'm going to get my pension. I'm going to get my Social Security. I'm going to have my savings. They used to call that the three legs of the retirement stool. I'm going to have those three things together. And as long as I have that, I know I'm good to go. And we want to take that same confidence and apply it to this market-driven retirement and say, as long as I take this much out and as long as I save this long, then I'm going to be fine and everything's going to be okay. But it is not the same world. So it means we have to think differently. We have to change the way we do this. And one of the ways we do that is just by education, because everyone's situation is different. And people hear that and they get angry at me, because what you want is just tell me what to do. Just give me a solution. But the reality is, I had a client in the office recently who had virtually no savings. Okay. They had literally virtually no savings. And you would assume hearing that, man, they are stuck. They're in trouble. They're going to have a miserable retirement. You know what they did have? They had four income properties. And at least two of those were already paid off. And they were probably going to have the other two paid off based on their spreadsheets within 2 or 3 years. There is no one right way to do this, but they were sitting in really good shape, because even though they didn't have a lot of liquid resources, which is what I pushed them on, so they started working on growing their savings, they had unbelievable assets through real estate. That's where they put the money, and they were getting investments in. And then I have other people come in that have no real estate, no interest in that at all, but they've saved really consistently, and they have a ton of money sitting in that 401k, and they go, what do I do with this? And so the answer is different for everyone. For the person with a lot of real estate, again, it was pushing, we need to add liquidity. For the person that has a ton sitting in the market and they're going, I'm worried the market's going to go up and down, the first is we got to establish your risk. And the second is maybe we need to create better, consistent income producing options for you. Because again, taking money out of the market when it's dropping is not the way to do it. Just ask the guy I work with, again, who in 2007 tried to retire, take money out, market tanked in 2008, and he was stuck. We've got to look at the breadth of options, but here's the first place to start. Just drop your assumptions that it's similar to what it was in the past, that it's just plug and play, because it's not. Now, the beauty of this is it opens up all sorts of opportunities for you, where you have so much more freedom in determining what you feel comfortable with, how you want to invest, where you want to get income. Those are all great things. And what I love about financial planning is I can sit down with people and say, Who are you? What is the fit for you? What are the dreams that you have? How do we take all the different resources you've accumulated and leverage those towards your dreams? But there's no one way to do that like there used to be. And the faster that we own that and get on it and say, okay, well, then what fits for me? What do I feel comfortable with? What's the most effective strategies that fit my risk tolerance? That's when we reach a healthy place. So friends, we no longer live in a plug-and-play, pension-driven retirement reality. We now sit in a market-driven retirement where it truly is on you. And maybe the first step you need to take is owning that and exploring, okay, well, what does that mean? What are my options in a way beyond just checking the box every year that you're going to contribute that much to get the match on your 401k? Because if that's all we're doing, we could truly be in trouble. All right, I want to answer a few more questions that I wasn't able to get to earlier from our lightning round. First question is going to come from Ben. Ben says, I've heard Bitcoin is blowing up again. Are you advising your clients to invest there? Ben, thank you for writing in. So yeah, Bitcoin is doing well this year. It's up like 40%, I think, just this year. And this year is all of a month and a half. It just passed 10,000 again, if you're someone who follows Bitcoin. And so, of course, there's a rush towards that because this is the year to... that Bitcoin will split again. And I don't want to dig deep into the weeds. If you're not a Bitcoin person, I think it's better to give a broader answer here, which is no. I don't go to my clients and say, oh, look, there's an opportunity in Bitcoin. Let's now take a ton of money and put it into it. What I do with my clients from the outset, and what I think any financial planner, I really believe in this style of investing. There's folks that disagree, but is we look and say, I want to diversify you across a massive amount of holdings so that no one piece can wreck you. Okay, Bitcoin is notoriously volatile. It's going to go way up and it's going to go way down. The underlying technology, blockchain, is revolutionary and it will continue to be revolutionary, and we have to keep our eyes on that. And it's really, there's incredible things that are coming because of blockchain technology. Bitcoin itself is just like any other investment, in my opinion. And so is it okay to have some money in Bitcoin? Sure. Is it a good thing to put most of your money into there? I would say no way. Especially if you're close to retirement, but for everyone, the best way to invest, and this is a good litmus test for investing for you, if it's sexy, you probably want to avoid it, okay? If it seems sexy, it's probably not a good investment. Why is that? Because good long-term investing that weathers all the ups and downs that you'll experience over years and years of investing is really kind of boring. People don't want to hear that. But it's not like blackjack in Vegas. It's not, I'm going to find that one thing, I'm going to win the lottery. And I think all of us are looking for that on some level. I'm going to pick that one stock, I'm going to pick that one thing, and it's going to blow up and I'm going to win. And the reality is when we think that way, what tends to happen is the opposite. We pick that one stock, it drops dramatically, and we are ruined. And I've had to sit in the room with people weeping. That's why I keep Kleenex in the office now. Because they picked the wrong thing and they lost what they had worked years for. Okay, so we cannot think about the market, Bitcoin or anything else, as our lotto ticket out. That just doesn't work. It is the more diversified you are, the more ready you are to handle the ups and downs in the market. So you own a lot of stuff. My clients, it's over 17,000 different unique holdings. Why? Well, they might not get the growth you would get like 40% in a month and a half on Bitcoin, but they also aren't going to get the drops you're going to get if things go down. And the goal is that long term, we see steady, consistent growth over time that gets you to where when you're at retirement, you actually have the funds to make that play. So no, I'm not pushing people into Bitcoin, but it's not because Bitcoin is good or bad per se. It's because it should just be a piece of the overall portfolio you have. And again, that litmus test, I think the best way to think about it is, if it seems really sexy, if I'm attracted to it because it seems like my lotto ticket out, probably something I shouldn't be doing, or at least not as much as I'm considering doing. But great question, Ben. Thanks so much for asking. Hey, we're about out of time. I just want to remind you of this. If you're not someone who listens to our daily update or gets our daily update, that is the favorite thing I get to do every day. I love the show. I love everything, the podcast we get to do. But my favorite thing is that every single day I get a few minutes where I get to sit, look at what's going on in the world, look at what's going on in the market, and then try to talk about what does this mean specifically for you and I? How does it filter down to our specific situation? So if you're not getting that, just go to dynamicmoney.com. It goes out on the radio, but we also send it out as an email and people get it every day. And it's so short, but it just gives you a quick glimpse of what's happening today and how does that impact me? And hopefully that's some benefit to you. I know it's been a benefit to me just to make it every day. But thanks so much. Look forward to chatting with you next week.